Now we're going to go into a little topic here that many people, this is the type of questions I receive most frequently from the MichiganMadness.com.
Right.
The questions that came in, of course, as you can probably guess, a lot of people were calling in to write about the Depression, what had gone on with it. And I've noticed a lot of the people that wrote in to ask about it, 70% of them, 75%, would also mention that they themselves suffer from the same sort of thing, a surprisingly high number, and they're interested in more of the details behind that. But I'd like to start with, when did you first have symptoms of depression and realize that this was some sort of problem?
Well, the depression in my case hit when I was 36 years old. I'm 42 right now. But I can look back to my childhood now, and now that I know what depression is, I really didn't know what it was when I first was hit with it. Most people who have never dealt with depression never read about it or study it or learn about the symptoms or read off a checklist of symptoms. They just don't bother entertaining the subject because it doesn't affect them. And that was me up until 36 years of age. So when I got hit with it, it was a real strange surprise and a very, very hard thing to wrap myself around and get comfortable with and accept. But once I learned really what it was, I was able to determine that I first got hit as a child, pre-adolescent, maybe 11 years old, maybe 12. I got hit then, and I realize that now. I realize my first bout was not at 36.
Wow.
But was back then. And
were you having... Well, I mean, what makes you say that? I should come out first of all. I know very little. I'm by no means any expert on depression myself, and I'm very ignorant on the subject, I have to admit.
Most people are. There is a club of us. Those of us who have had it understand it, and those who haven't had it don't.
That's pretty
much a line you can draw. It is true that there are people who have not had it who are psychiatrists or psychologists who have a pretty good handle on understanding it. But by and large, it's the people who have had it get it, and the people who don't, and that's just going to be the way it is.
And I have to be, I mean, through your show and hearing from other people, I can understand how horrible it can be to live with, to deal with. But in reality, I have to be on the side that really doesn't know or can't know,
right.
I believe, what it truly is to go through this.
Right, and none of us wish for you to get that kind of an understanding of it.
I hope that is the case and continues to be so. So I'd just like you to keep that in mind, and for others listening, that I'm by no means any expert on it, and I just want to go through your own experiences with it and what's happened. But when you're 11 years old, you realize that were you experiencing physical things, or was it an emotional thing?
I did not have any physical symptoms back then. For those who know about this know that when I was hit at 36, I had incredible physical symptoms and all sorts of pains and chased it as a physical illness for a year and a half before getting a depression diagnosis. But as a child, no, it was all there often is a dominant emotion in depression, a dominant emotion. With women, it's often a sadness or despondency. With men, it's often anger. With me, it was terror. And when I was a child, that was the dominant emotion, and it would hit usually around sundown, and it would stay with me until the sun rose the next day. Then it would be gone. And then it would come back, twilight, and rage through the dark hours, and then disappear by morning. And I had no idea why it was there. It would, you know, they know now that they can give you a little drug that alters a little chemistry in your brain, and you can feel ecstasy. You can feel ecstatic and happy. And, you know, there is a chemical that can shift in your brain, and you can feel terror. And there's one that can make you feel sad. And whatever was happening inside my brain, when that sun would go down, there was just a switch, a click, something that took me from a state of everything being okay to everything being anything but okay. And that lasted for an entire summer. And somehow, I think, I put that away on some psychological level, buried it, escaped it, ignored it, didn't solve the problem, but put it away somewhere, and I think successfully kept it buried until the age of 36 when it reared its ugly head again, but in this particular case came back in physical symptoms, which were horrible. Stomach pains and chest pains and back pains and headaches and massive weight loss, and again with feelings of terror and feelings of great fear, and that my body was, you know, turning on itself and I was on a slow course to the grave.
Well, when you say terror, do you mean just terror in general, that you didn't have any foundation about what it was even about, or did you think you were going to die, or someone was going to, there's going to be a horrible accident?
It can be terror of physical demise, terror of nothing being safe, no one being safe, the world not being a comfortable, secure place, feelings of doom, feelings that you know, I don't know how to explain it. You'd have to be able to understand that when some guy kicks in your door and aims a gun at you, there's no reason why you can't feel joy at that moment. Why is it that you have to feel terror? You feel terror because there is some physiological thing happening that is causing you to feel terror. But when that happens, when a guy kicks the door in and points a gun at you, that's considered a good thing because you want your body to do that as a survival mechanism. If that brought you joy, you wouldn't run or you wouldn't do something to save yourself, and you'd die. So evolutionarily speaking, you want terror in certain circumstances. With depression, something goes haywire, and you feel it when there's no reason to feel it, at least no conscious reason, no reason I'm consciously aware of, no reason anybody can find. But the feeling is the same. You know, if someone's going to drop a nuclear bomb on the United States, you're going to feel great sadness and fear and a sense of hopelessness and despondency. And the bomb isn't making you feel that. There's something going on in your body that's making you feel that. Granted, it's a response to that bomb, but it's still in you. It's in you. And the thing about depression is stuff like that happens without any of the circumstances there that should be causing it.
That's a good analogy. I've never thought of it in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it makes sense. When you did have the physical problems I believe it was the late 90s when you had the major bout when you were at 36.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you had the physical ailments, were they truly physical? Or
That's the thing. Where do you feel pain? When you feel pain, if I take a bat right now to your leg and hit it, you're not feeling it in the leg. The pain is being, you're feeling it in your brain. That's in your brain. That's where the pain receptors are. So, you know, pain is in the brain. When a guy gets his leg cut off, he still feels pain in the leg, even though the leg's gone. How is that possible? Because the pain is felt in the brain.
Huh. So you did have this
pain is very real. The pain is very, very real. As real as any pain you'd ever experience. Yeah. It's not.
Okay.
It's no different than anybody else's pain.
So it's actually there and felt in the brain. It might not. I understand what you're saying. It's sort of a phantom.
Your pain receptors are in your brain. If you didn't have those, you wouldn't feel any pain anywhere.
Okay.
So, you know, it's real pain.
Wow.
But I don't know why, I mean, I don't know. I can't do the medical math on just how it's created. I have no idea. But it's intense and it's burning and it's debilitating and it's awful. I mean, there were times when I could not climb a staircase.
Wow.
I could not get my body up to climb a staircase. Now, there was nothing that could be found wrong if I had gone to a doctor at that moment. I mean, I went to the Mayo Clinic. You got a guy who cannot climb a staircase, who cannot get up, who would have to crawl and still would have trouble getting up a staircase, and there isn't a doctor in the world who can find anything wrong with him. What you learn in my situation is that 50% of people who go to doctors with ailments walk away without a diagnosis. The doctors have no idea what's wrong with them. Nothing shows up. a large percentage of those people are dealing with symptoms that are coming from depression.
During that first major bout in 99, was it 99?
I can't remember.
Am I getting that wrong?
I'm not sure.
It seems to me it was right around then.
Sounds right.
But when you were dealing with that first major bout of it, were you in a lot of physical pain most of that time? It seems like you're out. I remember you're out,
I was out
periodically
off and
on. For a while, and then all of a sudden you're out for starting in the fall all the way through.
Well, the very first time I got
first
hit,
of the
I
year.
Remember, was in December. I don't remember what year, but I remember I got hit in December, and those were bad headaches. And I was at the emergency room several times, and I couldn't turn my head to the left or right. And then I kind of got that went away in February. Then that September, I got it again. But this time it wasn't headaches, it was stomach. And that lasted in the fall, and I took some time off work, and then I'd come back, and, you know, I'd chase it as one thing and chase it as another, and then I wound up in the hospital, and I was down 30 pounds, and I was being tested for cancer, and then I was back, and then I was good again in January. Then in March, I just decided I was going to quit radio. I was just feeling miserable and just deciding that it must be the job. If I switch jobs, everything's going to be fine. And then I went through this heavy-duty detoxification program. I had all the mercury pulled out of my mouth, all the, you know, fillings, and got rid of all that. And I went through some high doses of buffered C and just its detoxification program. I felt better. Went back to work in April, felt good until the next September. Next September, I got hit again. That's when it finally gets diagnosed as depression. They advise I take 3 months off work. I bail out on work. I have a horrible fall, lose a bunch of weight, in a lot of pain, spend a lot of time in the backyard. I can't look at a newspaper. I can't look at a television. I can't listen to a radio. I can't look at a photograph. I can't read a book. All I can do is sit and stare, almost catatonic. And then through, you know, and I was doing all sorts of alternative things and conventional things, Western medicine, Eastern medicine. Just what I learned through all of this is that even after all these years, we still don't know a lot about depression, and we still don't know a lot about, is depression one thing? Are there many different kinds of depression? What causes it? What's the difference between somebody who can have depression one time in his or her life and someone who has to have it all their life, off and on, as just a chronic disease that'll never completely leave them? Why do some people have antidepressants work and others not? Why do some people have mild depression, some people moderate, some people severe? I just think we're just still learning so much about it. And obviously, if I could spend a year and a half going to the best doctors in the state of Minnesota and not one of them ever uttered the word depression, we don't know enough about it. Those
right.
guys should have known. There should have been a simple test you gave me and said, oh, okay, it's depression. But they didn't know. They had never heard of this pain this physical pain.
Who diagnosed it or who? Your mother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the end, always go with your ma. She was the one who figured it out before anybody else did. And
okay.
that includes the best doctors in the state of Minnesota. So she's the one who first mentioned it, first brought it up. No one else had said it.
A mother knows their child.
Yeah.
Now, how in the world did your wife and kids deal with this?
Oh, it was a freaking nightmare. My one boy actually was so traumatized by it that after I finally got well, he would not let me leave the house without him. And he would not let me be out of his sight. And if I had to be out of his sight, if I really had to leave and there's no way around it, he had to stay home, he would go into such a tantrum that it would almost appear to someone passing by as though he was experiencing the greatest terror ever experienced by a child.
What was his fear when you were leaving?
That I wouldn't come back. You know, there was such a sense, I think, that Dad was withering away and dying. You know, and then when I was in the hospital and I was gone for a while, I just think the whole perception around the house when we were going through that period where we didn't have it diagnosed was that there was some mysterious illness that had me and was going to finish me off. And none of us, it was a race to find it before it finished me off, you know.
Frankly, I think that was the perception of your listeners also at the same time.
Yeah.
Seriously, because the whole thing with Don Vogel and how he was off the air and then all of a sudden he's gone.
All of a sudden he's gone, right.
And here you are off the air for months. You don't really hear
Yeah.
Of course, because you're still learning yourself what's going on here.
Right.
But there's nothing said to the listeners. And my concern was, and I'm sure others were too, that Tom has cancer. Tom has something else. And he's
irritable bowel.
Irritable bowel.
Terminal
and he's not going to make
bowel.
It. And we're going to come back one day and they'll be announcing that, you know, Mischke has passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy that I'm not happy that you had depression.
Right.
But it's great that you were able to come back and at least you know what is going on with you and can begin to deal with it and try and change things for the better.
Yeah, and it's a common affliction. When I first got it, I didn't know anybody with it. And since I've been diagnosed with it, I now don't know anybody who doesn't have it. I mean, it is that almost that strange. As soon as you have it, everybody else who has it feels perfectly comfortable telling you they do because they don't feel there's going to be a stigma telling someone else who also has it. So my mailman and my hardware store owner and my next-door neighbor and, you know, my aunt and my grandfather and all these people who I never knew and never mentioned anything about it all of a sudden are confiding in me and telling me their horror stories, and I'm realizing it's all over the place. And now every time I go to a restaurant, I say to my wife, well, not every time, that'd be a little ridiculous, but I have said to her that every time we go to a restaurant, we are seated around in the midst of depressed people, family of depressed people, friends of depressed people, that everybody in that restaurant deals with depression in one way or another. If not themselves, they deal with it with a coworker, they deal with it with a family member. It's so common. Now, not necessarily my type. My type is a kind of depression called masked depression. That's what I was diagnosed with. And the reason it's called that is because it masks itself as a physical ailment. And that's a smaller percentage who have that. But and obviously, there are not all these people have severe depression. Severe depression where you're absolutely bedridden and you can't function, where I have been. I mean, there are mild and moderate depressions where people go to work and still, you know, live their lives. But it is very prevalent, and I don't know that we know why the hell that is.
Okay.
I don't know that we have figured out what the hell's going on there.
When I hear depression, I think of sad, feeling real down.
Yeah, that's a big mistake people make. The most common mistake people make when they hear someone is depressed is they say, hey, you know, let's go for a walk. Let's go down to the river. You know, maybe I can, you know, help lift your spirits. No, that's when people are sad. You know, your dog dies, you're sad. You break up with a girlfriend, you're sad.
Okay.
You can help someone like that by driving over to their house, picking them up and going out for a beer or going for a walk. You can't do anything for someone with depression. There's nothing you can do. It's a disease. You can't cheer them up. It's the equivalent of saying to someone who's just had both legs amputated, well, let me try and take you for a walk. I mean, let me see if I can get you to walk. I got an idea. We'll go down to this one area where you might be able to walk. It's just people don't know that. I had a guy, quadriplegic, call me up one time, and his plan was he's a quadriplegic and he's happy, so I should be happy.
Okay.
And so he called me up to give me a pep talk, kind of a motivational speech.
Yeah.
And I wanted to hit whatever part of his body he could still feel. I mean, he was well-meaning, but he did. There's the only thing worse than having depression is having someone talk to you who. Well, no, let's put it this way. The only thing worse than having depression, or what compounds the pain of depression, is the people around you who have no idea what you're dealing with.
Okay.
And what talking to him proved to me was that here was another guy who has no idea what I'm dealing with. You know, when you see someone with cancer withering away and losing weight and they're gaunt and their hair's falling out, I mean, you could see that.
Right.
But sometimes when you're seeing someone with depression, you don't see really the suffering. And and you certainly don't see why it's there. And as well-meaning as this guy was, he angered me.
Okay.
Because he was treating it as though I'm just having a down day or just kind of sad from circumstances. And I'm very, very sick with a serious illness that I consider quite serious. And, you know, thank God you can be a quadriplegic and be happy. Good for you. I'm not happy. I have depression. Go the hell away.
So you can understand the misunderstanding and the perception and the well-meaning of it. But...
Oh, yeah. And I would have been that guy if our roles were reversed. But
right.
I just wasn't in the mood for it. And it's frustrating. It's just frustrating. I'm human. And when a guy is so clearly not getting it, you have the illness and then you have somebody who just doesn't get it. I often have said to people, I'm not on the same planet you're on. I don't even occupy the same space. I can walk out my door and look at a sunset, and I know logically that it should be stunningly beautiful. Purple clouds and this glorious red ball and the trees illuminated in ways that they are only illuminated 9 or 10 times a year. And what is supposed to be beautiful isn't even remotely pretty to me. It's horrible. It's devastatingly agonizing to even look at.
I can't even fathom that.
No, you never will be able to. So why bother trying?
Okay.
You just have to go on with your life and just realize that, you know, thank God you don't have to deal with it. But there's nothing that can be gained from spending a lot of time trying to understand depression if you don't have it. If you're in a field where you have to deal with it, if you're in the psychology field or psychiatry or medical field, well, yeah, you owe it to yourself to learn more about it. Or if you have a family member or something, maybe. But if you don't have to learn about it, don't learn about it. Don't bother.
Okay. Well, when you were in the depths of it, especially with that first bout, were there ever thoughts of ending your life?
Nope, never had that, and I'm lucky that way.
Okay.
I'm the only guy I know who has not, and I'm sure there are others, but I'm the only one I know who has had severe depression without suicidal thoughts.
How could you not feel that way, though, when you describe...
Because the terror is already that I am dying.
Okay.
So to then be suicidal would be an odd reaction to being scared that you're dying.
Right.
You know, see, I'm already, part of the fear is that I already am dying,
okay.
That I am literally dying. I mean, I feel like I'm dying. I'm withering away. I'm losing weight. I'm looking terrible. I'm in a lot of pain. I'm just sitting around every day. I'm not eating. I mean, it's a feeling like you're just dying. And then there's the terror of dying. So then to be suicidal would be so odd because, at least from my perception, because I'm dying and I don't want to die, thus I'll shoot myself.
Okay,
you know,
makes
it's just
sense.
It just doesn't. That's not the way my depression worked. I just didn't.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I never had a suicidal thought. Now I have been around people who have attempted suicide, and I certainly understand suicide, and I certainly understand. I do not consider suicide to be anything at all to feel bad about as far as the person committing suicide is concerned. There should be no shame or guilt in it at all. What you are doing is dying of an illness, and when you shoot yourself or hang yourself or OD, you have now died of that illness. And the illness is depression, and there is a level of pain the human body can take, and there is a level of pain that's beyond that, and a suicide is an acknowledgement that you have crossed the line into a pain level you simply cannot take anymore, and I don't begrudge anybody that. I do not view someone who kills himself with depression any differently than someone who dies of cancer. They are victims both of their disease. So it's just there's just a level of suffering that we can endure and a level that we cannot. And those who kill themselves have crossed that line. And unless you felt that level of pain, you cannot condemn them. And I don't think God does either. I think those people simply died of a disease.
Okay. That's interesting. I had, and I'm sure many have, known someone who has committed suicide that you know did have a problem, was depressed. At the time, I was sad about the person that had killed herself. And then later, I felt more mad because the people that she had left behind, the pain she had caused them. But hearing you talk and learning more about depression, what I know now, it helps to know this is an illness. This is something, like you said, you get to a point where the pain is just insane.
Thank God those people who... kill themselves are not around to hear the anger of those people who are mad at them for the people they hurt by killing themselves, because that would just add insult to injury. They've already died of this disease, and now people are going to condemn them for having killed themselves and leaving behind. I just don't believe in that. They died of a disease. They died of a depression that kills millions of people every year. And yeah, it's tragic for the people left behind. But it's tragic for the people left behind when someone dies of cancer too. It's just the disease sucks.
Okay.
And so, and it's for some people, it's terminal.